Everybody to the next installment of the IMGD speaker series. I'm Rob Lindemann, IMGD professor, and we're very happy to have an WPI alum, Ichiro Lam, come talk to us about a very interesting and fun project that his company has been working on for a while, and some WPI students actually helped out with the summer. Ichiro graduated in 1998, with a bachelor's in physics. He's founder and president of Dejabon Games, a Boston area indie game company studio. He has worked in the industry since 1993, co-founding Worlds Apart Productions, now Sony Online Entertainment Denver, in 1995, and Dejabon Games, still Dejabon Games, in 1999. Since its founding, he's led the development on the studio's 13 titles, working on titles for PDAs, desktop PCs, and he says he doesn't take himself too seriously, but takes game development very seriously. So Ichiro has a very strong connection to WPI, obviously, because he was here as a student.
I was here as a student,
actually,
right here.
But also because he's a member of our advisory board, and he's come to give a master class, and he's come to the speaker series to give talks a couple times. And we had one student graduate last year who said the best class he ever had at WPI was the master class that he took with Ichiro.
Can I ask who that was?
No idea.
The price was right.
Anonymous.
So anyway, I'll get out of the way and here's Ichiro.
All right. How are you guys doing today? All right, pretty good. Looking forward to the launch. I heard about the launch. I didn't realize we were going to have launch.
You lost part of your screen. You got to hit that calibrate button to get the left-hand part of the screen.
Calibrate.
There's a recalibrate,
auto.
I thought it was all magic nowadays.
It was magic, but now it's science.
Oh, science is problematic.
There you go.
Okay. That's awesome. This is fancy new... F5, right, okay. I know how to use computers. Okay, how do I go back? Yeah, all right, that good. Yeah, okay, good. Okay, talk today, how to make your next game even more awesome than your last. And all of you have written games. How many people are not interactive media game development here? Everybody? Okay, 1, 2, 3... Okay, cool. Do you guys write games? Are you interested in games? Those, all right. Okay, cool. So, you know, you all have your last game, and your next game will invariably be better than your last game. For those unfamiliar, you know, I know some faces around here, and some of you guys know me, but our last game was called A Reckless Disregard for Gravity. I'm just going to repeat a little bit of what Rob said. I'm WPI class of 98. I was in this very room for some of my classes back in the day. I've been working on and off in the industry since 1993. Founded Dejabon Games in 1999. We just finished A Reckless Disregard for Gravity, which we abbreviate to 5 A's and an exclamation mark. September 3rd did we launch, Dan? Dan here, he's my gameplay architect. We have published on Direct to Drive, Gamer's Gate, Impulse, Steam, Wild Tangent, and we have received a good amount of press, PC Gamer, Rock, Paper, Shotgun, Edge, so forth and so on. So based on the successes that we've achieved with AH, I'm willing to say that we did a couple of things right, and, you know, of course we can always do better, which we will on our next game. But I would like to talk to you guys about a few things that we've done that we had not done before. And hopefully you'll be able to apply it to some of your own games. So, by way of summary, let me see. Okay. The talk is going to start with development stats, you know, who was responsible for development. And then we will go into, if we have time, 5 good things that we did. I'm probably going to focus on the first 3. And then during the lunch period, we can start talking about the other 2. And then finally, throughout, I would like to touch on how this might be of use to you during your studies now in your project work and in your careers afterwards. Now, show of hands, how many people intend to go into game development? Okay, you don't. No, all right, it's okay. I just, how many people do not intend to go into game development? All right, that's one. What are you going into? Okay, that's cool. Are you part of the new robotics program? How's that going? Okay, robots and video games have a lot to do with each other, or, you know, if not, then they should. Anyway, so hopefully this will be of use to most of you or some of you. So you already showed them the video. I will skip then that particular video. Essentially, you know, the game is about base jumping and dodging a bunch of stuff. And
you can show a little bit. I think some people weren't
here. Oh, all right. You didn't see it? You haven't seen this game? It's great.
No.
Oops. Okay, that's our Reckless Disregard for Gravity in theaters now. Bizarre. As you can see, that's not a AAA title. It's a very simple, straightforward game. The graphics are, I think they're solid. People like them, but this is not Crysis. This is not Halo. What's the latest Halo game? ODST, right? Halo 7 or whatever that is. Yeah, say that three times quickly. Okay, this game took us 8 months from inception, from prototype to launch. And what we did for this was Dan came up to me and he said, "Hey, Chiro, take a look at these base jumping videos on YouTube." Sorry, do I need to? Thank you. I can bring one up. Base jumping. Something like this. And he had a collection of, what, maybe a half a dozen?
So we came here to Norway to jump off some of the biggest cliffs in the world. And in the past, we've always done ski base jumps and kept our skis on and done really short delays. What we've always wanted to do is go off a terminal cliff. Terminal meaning you reach terminal velocity. So go off the cliff, do some flips or something, rip your skis off, and then fly away in a wingsuit.
Right.
Are these professionals?
Either that or they're dead. I don't know what the deal is. How do you learn something like this?
If they don't, they're experimental error.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so you take a look at these. We actually don't have skis, and that's maybe in the expansion pack. We wanted to capture some of the thrill of this because if you look through these base jumping videos, you see people falling. They look like they're falling inches from rocks, right? I mean, they go sliding down the sides of mountains in these little squirrely suits. That's kind of exciting to me. So we started with a prototype. 8 months later, we had a game that people were talking about. We had 4 developers and 2 PR marketing people. Developers were the development lead, that was me, gameplay architect, that was Dan. There was the art intern, which was Ryan over there, say hello. And Tamlin over there was our tech intern. The gameplay architect was responsible for level design and content, and for we called him the intern wrangler as well. Ryan on art internship had to do, of course, with aesthetics as well as the level layout. And Tamlin did something that I had proposed to Dean as an MQP. I said, hey, wouldn't it be nice if somebody could do an MQP on procedural content generation? Well, nobody said anything. We were hoping to get an MQP out of it. Tamlin did it in 2 months, so congratulations. We had a couple...
He's now doing his MQP.
What's that?
He's now doing
a he's now doing a real MQP with Disney, so that's fine. No, I don't, I'm hurt. But not that hurt. We had a couple of others, independent contractors, coming on and off. On top of that, we had two PR marketing people, and this is how important I think public relations and marketing is that a full third of our team, of our tiny six-person team, we had a PR lead and a PR intern, and I'll get to that a little better, a little later. So development went like this. From January to May, we had three people on the project, the development lead, that was me, gameplay architect. We essentially created a prototype for this and hammered at it until it started working. That's what you do with a prototype. The marketing lead helped us create some buzz for it. And then around June, which I think we're in, Tamlin, does the school year end around June, July, May? Okay, so we had you full through the beginning of June until a little bit before the beginning of September, and that was when we did the bulk of our development. So we were up to four developers, two on the marketing side. The results, I think, are the best yet for any of our games. We've certainly received most critical response that we've ever had. We've had reviews, interviews, features. You know, we have Rock, Paper, Shotgun coming to us and say, hey, we want to do an interview with your team. We had a nice full-page spread over in PC Gamer, which was a surprise. I have all this hanging up in $5 IKEA frames in my hallway. And then on the commercial side, we have solid sales, which, for example, from Steam, we were a good solid in the top 10 during our pre-launch period when we said, hey, this game is going to come out. Buy this for, I think we had a 10% off or something like that. We're currently in the top 10 in the indie bestsellers, and we held the top spot in sports for most of September. Now we're number 2, which is, you know, darn. Thrilled. Yes, sir.
What took the number one spot away from you?
You know, I don't remember. It was some...
It's been an NFL game.
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's a much larger title, so I don't mind being knocked off the list by a big title like that.
I mean, I wanted to compare the size of the team.
They probably spend more on cocktail parties than we spent on the whole game, but... so, I mean, the question is, what helped? What did we do this time around that we might not have done two or three games ago? And, you know, as Dean did, if you have any questions, please raise your hand or just yell. Okay, so 5 things that I want to talk about in particular. Number 1, we established what's called a high concept. Number 2, we did a lot of marketing. Number 3, we gave the game some character. And in addition to that, we started with existing IP so that we didn't have to begin the game from scratch. And then we completely abused the feedback that we got. So just a reminder to you guys, anything that I say here, feel free to poo-poo. If it doesn't work for you, it's not going to work for you. You know, something that works in our game for our company in 2009 is not going to work for your game for a larger studio or for an individual product in 2015. So, for example, I might come to a talk and I might say, hey, you know, it's good to have really good graphics. And who's going to argue with me there, right? You know, if you can have 2 games, all other things being equal, the game with the better graphics is going to win out. You know, graphics isn't everything, but it's tough to argue that. So the question, though, is, what if you're doing a game for the blind? Does graphics matter as much? Probably not. So things that worked well for us, things that we've identified may make sense for us for certain games, but not others. It may make sense for certain of your projects, but not others. So, you know, keep that in mind as we talk. In addition, to continue on the graphics thing, here is Crisis, here is Pokemon. I'm going to ask a loaded question. Which game is more popular? Is it the game that in 2008 sold 1 million copies? Or is it the game that by 2008 had sold 175 million copies? Okay, so graphics, not always important. Right tool for the right job. If you have a PC game like this, this is the level of graphics you might be shooting for. If you're shooting for a DS game, here you go. So always use your brain. All right. So to start in, what is a high concept? I always talk about high concept. I think high concept is really important. I'm just going to read this. A high concept is an intriguing idea that can be stated in a few words that is easily understood by all. So if I stand in front of you guys and I give you a one-sentence description of the game, you guys should be able to get some idea of the game. You should be excited about it. 3 points here. It should give people a gut feeling. You should actually feel something here or here or here about the game. It should have some meaning to you. If it doesn't, it's not a high concept. If it should convey some uniqueness, your high concept should immediately tell me what is true about my game, about your game, what is interesting about your game that is interesting specifically to your game that doesn't exist for any other game. So all of this culminates in the third point, which is that when somebody hears about your high concept, they should say, wow. They should actually go up to you and say, my God, why didn't I think of this? This is going to succeed for this reason, this reason, this reason. And these reasons might not even be ones that you've thought about, but if you have a good high concept, it's going to spawn some interesting ideas. People are just going to get excited about it. For our game, we had this for the high concept. Jump from buildings, flip off spectators, and spray paint things for points. Very simple, very straightforward. It gives people a feeling for the gameplay. If you hear that, you have ideas, and they may be different from the actual game, but you have ideas of how the game's going to play out. It also has some uniqueness to it. Now, how many games do you know where you can flip people off for points? Probably not that many. So that's something that's true of our game, but not any others. It also got a reaction from a lot of people. Read one joystick comment. He was quoting, he said, you can also gain points by flipping fans off at just the right moment. This may be the single greatest game ever created. Possibly an overstatement. But you gotta love it. You know, and you know, the fact of the matter is this is some random dude on a forum. Whereas, you know, these are the toughest people to win over because they're like, well, this game, Doom 3 was bad, and here are the 10 reasons I have for hating Doom 3. Or Grand Theft Auto was a piece of junk, and so forth and so on. So to get a good reaction, especially, in a field where you see all of these AAA titles that people spend $20 million developing, it's a great thing. If you get a reaction like this, as we did, I think you're on the right track. We felt that we were on the right track. Yes?
I'm curious. I seem to remember reading somewhere that back when you did the alpha of it, and you said we're making a game based on this video, you know, one of these.
Yep.
The reaction was not great.
Oh, absolutely. All right, so... I usually actually type it out. So, customer support requires a lot of typing, you know, when you answer an email. And so it's like, 2, 3, 4, 5. You'd think that I would bind that to a macro by now, but I don't think I'm that bright. Prototype.
same name, the same high concept, but the reaction was different.
Right. I would say two things. One, a lot of people were looking at the video. So if you look at the graphics in this video, you know, I'm going to admit that the graphics in Oz we have now, very clearly an indie production, very clearly not a AAA game, but much better than what we had in the prototype. And so we got two reactions from this, from our initial push. One was, look at this. I mean, the graphics are crap. You know, this is like this is Quake 1 level graphics, and that's one crowd. The other crowd said, you know, look, you see this word right here, prototype. How do you pronounce prototype? Prototype. And they actually yelled at the other people in our favor, which was kind of nice. And they said, look at all this gameplay that they're proposing. You know, we did a press release, which I'll talk about in a minute, and. You know, they said, here are the unique elements, and here's what we see about the game. Don't worry about the graphics, because they're going to be better. Think about the gameplay. Does that answer your question? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I guess. It's. I'm just curious about the high concept thing and what changed between the that looks like ass to... This is the greatest game ever.
This was actually a pretty early comment from Joystick. What happened, I think, was the early responses were bifurcated in, you know, this looks like a really amateurish title, and, oh, this has a lot of potential. And then we got the graphics a little better. We got the production values a little better. A lot of the people in the former camp started to say, okay, well, I can play this since it doesn't look like something for my TRS-80. So they were willing to say, okay, this looks interesting. Let's give the high concept a chance.
Okay.
So how to apply it to your stuff? This is something that you can apply today, any project that you're working on. Can you sum it up in one exciting sentence? First of all, not every game has to have this, but if you have a high concept, your gameplay elements are going to fall out of that. So if you can say something about it, if you can say, well, you're going to jump from buildings, you're going to flip spectators off, and you're going to spray paint buildings, what else falls out of that? Well, you know, instead of just flipping people off, can you give other people thumbs up? You know, can you moon people? Can you do other types of stunts? Can you jump from things that aren't buildings? Can you jump from terrain? Can you, you know... What else can you do other than spray paint buildings? But you get sort of a mindset. You say, here are some of the things. What's going to grow out of that? And that's this. Take care, if you're doing a high concept, to make sure that it is a high concept. A high concept is not, well, it's a mix of Halo and WoW. That, first of all, it might give people a little bit of a feeling, but not really. It certainly doesn't convey what's unique about your game. And I don't think Halo plus WoW, although potentially interesting, is really going to get anybody to say, why didn't I think of that? It's also not, this is GTA 4, except instead of cars, you're using hovercrafts. These are both framing statements, and they're important. If you want to describe your game, if you want to describe it as a mix of Halo and WoW, or if you want to say that it's GTA 4, except, you know, the prostitutes are all robots, that's fine. Those are framing statements. Don't, you know, if you're doing a high concept, make sure not to confuse those with your high concept. And when you do that, refine it until you can go to people and they will say, wow, that's a really interesting idea. So write any noun, and that noun will pop up on your screen to help you solve puzzles. What am I describing? Okay, Scribble Knots, right? Great high concept. Maybe not a great game. I'm going to go on film as saying that. Can I say that? Can I say that it pissed me off? But excellent high concept. And it allowed people, that particular high concept, our particular high concept, any good high concept, allows people to talk about your game. So, for example, if the press wants to write about a game, what does a journalist start with? Well, jump from buildings, flip people off, spray paint stuff. If gamers want to talk about your game, they're going to talk about jumping off of buildings, flipping people off, and spray painting stuff. They're not going to talk about the storyline because that's secondary to the high concept. They're not going to start with the game mechanics, except insofar as it's part of the high concept. They're going to start with that one line. How are we doing for time?
You can take as long as you have 2 hours, and
okay.
We're not limited to an hour.
All right, that's fine. I don't want to bore anybody.
Pizza coming in, so is your pizza coming there or not?
Yeah, coming at noon, but
yes. Well, cold pizza is the best, right? You get some cold pizza and you reheat it; it's better than when it started. Okay, I get a begrudging yes from Chuck, but all right, fine. That is a high concept. Cold pizza reheated. Crispy cold pizza. All right. Our high concept actually came when we wrote our press release. Now, is anybody familiar with the concept of a press release? I know Tamlin and Ryan should be, Dean should be, all the professors should be. But essentially, this is when you talk to the press at first, what do? Do you say, here's a link to my game, here's the executable that you can download, go download it? No. The press has a lot to do. They have to be able to digest what you're trying to tell them in one sentence or less, which is why the high concept is important. They can look at it and say, oh, that's interesting, or they can look at it and say, I'm going to, you know, look at Halo 6 instead. So we, you know, early on wrote our initial press release, and this is what Dean was talking about. Read it very quickly. January 30th, 2009, Dejavan Games LLC has announced, reckless disregard for gravity for Windows. You dive off a skyscraper relying on crook reflexes to negotiate the intricate tangle of girders that make up the city. Blah, blah, blah. Aerial stunts at terminal velocity, parachuting into the arms of your cheering fans. Other skydivers have it easy, but you actually have to work for it. Gliding within an eyelash of a glass super skyscraper at 70 miles per hour. As you descend, you toss the spectators a thumbs up or flip them off to boost your score. Now, when we wrote this press release, we actually didn't know what the game was going to be about. We came in and we said, it's about falling. What's exciting about that? And I'll get to that in a minute. The high concept, in part, here, one-third of the complete high concept came from our writing the press release. So if you're having trouble coming up with a high concept, coming up with what is particularly interesting about your game, try writing about it. Try describing it to somebody. And if the description is interesting to them, it's going to be interesting to other people. So this is all part of marketing, which is the number two thing that I think we did really well. And I sandwiched this between points one and three right here. High concept is something you guys can use. Adding character to your game is something that you can use. Marketing is something that you guys might not even think about while you're doing your undergrad, but is absolutely something that you're going to think about when you're feeding your family writing games. So, what is it? Marketing to us is three things. Number one, most importantly, creating a game that people want to play over other games. Why do you buy my game? Well, you can buy 100 others. You can buy a pair of pants. You can go to the movies for $15. Why do you want to play my game instead of all of that other stuff? Marketing is telling people about it. If you create the best game in the world and not one person knows about it, nobody's going to buy your game. Now, there are a bunch of ways to market it and to tell people about it. You know, if you put it out there and it's a really interesting game, people are going to talk about it. However, you also want to hit the press. You want to talk to, you want to do videos. You want to talk over Twitter and so forth and so on, so that it's possible and interesting for other people to talk to each other about it. One thing marketing is not is inherently evil. A lot of people think about marketing and they think about essentially talking people into buying an awful game or a product or, you know, a soap, a dishwasher, agent, or a movie or TV program. It's not about talking people into buying something they don't want. It's about these three other things. So step number one is something that we've gotten wrong before, something that a lot of people get wrong, is creating the right game. How do you know what game other people are going to want to play? I put it in boldface here. creating a game that people want to play over other games, because you can create a game that's exactly the same as Doom 3 or Halo, ODST, if I have that right. But if those games already exist, why are they going to play yours? We had during the GTA 3 time period a bunch of games that were actually quite technologically sophisticated. They were fun, but they already existed in GTA 3. There was a title that you could play, you know, a gangster. There was somebody, you know, you could play a mafioso, or you could play somebody who was a stuntman and so forth and so on. Grand Theft Auto 4 is being made, or was being, you know, was made. People remember the Grand Theft Auto series, but not these other games because they weren't remarkable. Nobody wanted to play them over Grand Theft Auto 3. In any given year, you have literally hundreds of platformers, and a platformer is relatively easy to create. You know, you get your copy of Game Maker Pro out, and you make a platformer, right? Why was Braid so remarkable? It was a platformer, right? How many people have played Braid? Okay, pretty much everybody has played Braid. I gotta get you to play Braid. It's actually pretty good.
Oh, I just didn't raise my hands because I'm not a student.
Right. How many people have finished Braid?
What do you mean by finished?
Played it through to the end. What do I mean by the end? I would say gotten to the final thing without tearing your hair out and killing yourself. You don't have to unlock. Have you unlocked all of the puzzle pieces?
I have not gotten all the stars.
Okay.
But I have finished.
Yeah. Well, who's unlocked all the stars? Okay. You're dedicated. I like that. Okay, good. What's that?
Took a while.
Yeah, all right. You know, but would you have spent that amount of time on a platformer that wasn't as innovative?
Probably
not. Braid did a lot of interesting things. They were small things that had big gameplay ramifications. Creating the right game involves... marketing involves planning the right game. And that starts from the moment you put pen to paper and say, here's the game that I want to write. So post-prototype, you saw our prototype. We asked ourselves this. Is this really unique? And if you saw the prototype video just now, we said to ourselves, well, in the game you swerve between buildings, and that's kind of unique, right? Oh, but you get points for smashing through glass. Well, I mean, that's kind of neat. No, you do that in every game. Base jumping is unique, right? That's going to sell a million copies if we write a game about base jumping because people have never played a game about base jumping. Well, it so happens that there was actually a base jumping game before ours, and I don't know if I want to be on camera saying this, but it sank without a trace because base jumping is really boring when you put it on the small screen. What is exciting about base jumping? Well, it's about the wind in your face, and the fact that if you screw up, you're going to die. You can't really get that in video games unless you attach a USB fan and maybe like a USB gun to your computer, right? So these things, swerving between buildings, getting points for smashing through glass, which were elements of our initial prototype, weren't that exciting. We iterated until we had a couple of interesting ideas. And I know Ryan and Tamlin can attest to that. We came up with some of these ideas pretty late in the game, like graffiti, which has been done in games, but I think it's pretty interesting in this one. It added to it. It's something that we added, when, in August, maybe? I think there were 2 weeks left to go in game development, and we say, well, we need another mechanic. How about spray paint? But we iterated. We tried dozens of ideas. We tried, you know, what if you were a pinball? And you careen between building and building. Would that be interesting? Maybe not. What else did we have?
We had the Spider-Man-esque grappling hook.
Yeah.
Which was a fun way to waste an entire afternoon, but didn't really work.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in some interesting game, you know, we might make a game out of that. Swinging from building to building on a web that you shoot is actually pretty fun.
Magnetic grapple.
Yes, a magnetic grapple trademark.
Similar to, but legally distinct from, Spider-Man's weapon.
That's correct. Sherry Bobbins. Fun, but, you know, not thematic to the game. So we iterated until we thought we had something interesting. And this is something that you can do. Yes?
Did you try force fields?
You get sucked in or pushed out by certain...
Yes, we had gravity wells.
Slingshots.
Yep.
And you ride around the edge, and didn't work.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was. We tried a bunch of things. So we had these little black hole things that would actually pull you in. And the objective, the thought, was that, you know, you would shoot down this level, and then suddenly it would slingshot you back up, or it would slingshot you around a building. And, you know, we tried that. In concept, it sounds fun. You know, if you say, here's a base jumping game with black holes, that's not a bad high concept. And, you know, but prototyping is important. We tested it out. We tried it, and it didn't work out the way we had hoped. We dropped that. So we went through, you know, a bunch of different things. But even before you start, before you move from prototype over to development, ask yourself, what is unique about my game? What can I do within my game to make it interesting that doesn't exist in other games? So for you, what is creating the right game? It's probably the game that's going to get you the A right now. So a student project will focus on things like technical considerations. Does it run? Do you do something interesting algorithmically that you haven't done before? Artistic direction, is it complete? Is the graphics good? You know, do I use this particular type of model appropriately? Do I animate this right? Teamwork, did I kill my teammates? You know, yes, we'll probably get you an NR. No, we'll get you anything above an NR. And your goal is going to be to create a solid working game. So creating the right game as we're talking about it might not be as important for you immediately. Or is it? Here are two games that are or were university games that, in my opinion, were newsworthy. You have De Blob, which was done by 8 students in the Netherlands. And you have Flow, which was done by Genova Chen for his USC, for his thesis. Here's a question to ask yourself. You know, even while you're doing your undergrad, is it possible for you to do something that's so remarkable that it's going to get in the newspapers, in the magazines, on websites, and on television? Might not be your number one goal, but it certainly wouldn't hurt. If you had that on your resume, if you had Flow on your resume, you would get however many millions of dollars worth of funding. Or, you know, you'll certainly get a job as the people from, was it Nebraska Drop got? I think they, am I correct? They were students?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, for those that don't know, DigiPen, Guildhall, these students came up with the idea for Portal while they were studying. They said, boom, portal there, walk through this portal, out this portal. Valve said, belong to us now, please. Can you create something that's remarkable? Absolutely. I think, you know, based on what I've seen, just about everybody in this room is able to create a game in his or her undergraduate career that is so remarkable that it can appear as a full pager in PC Gamer or Edge or even in Wired. Certainly, though, even if you don't do that as your undergrad, in your undergrad, your future games are going to be judged by a different metric. Are you creating the right game? Well, if you're creating the right game, it means that your family gets to eat. It means that you are going to have a company or a position that's going to pay you. So what gets you an A-plus in class won't necessarily feed you and your family however many years down the road. So that's point number one. Create a game that people want to play, specifically over other games. If you can create a game during you know, your project work that everybody says, I want to play this game and not this other student's game, then you've done a good job. You also have to tell people about it. Now, the AWE plan was pretty simple. We started with an initial press release in the shots, and you saw the video from that. And the press release was this, which I can talk about in a bit. How are we doing for time? Got lots of time. I actually don't want to talk for more than an hour because I don't want to bore everybody. My voice is going, and I'd like to talk to you guys. Then I have 20 minutes. Awesome. Initial press release. What is the first thing that we say to press? That's this. Prototype videos. What do we have? You know, we had a prototype based on our previous game, and we basically said, let's add falling to the game that we had before and try that as a prototype. We worked on our alpha press release, which is once we had the core elements of the game, let's tell the press about that so that they can talk about it. Let's tell the press that we're betaing so that they can talk about it more. And each time, initial press release, alpha press release, beta press release, we wanted to talk about something interesting and new. And we did something like, we did a bunch of things, like the IGN File Planet beta. We said, okay, well, for you 10,000 or 30,000 people, you get an all access pass to our beta, and here are the three different things that you can do within the beta over the course of three weekends. And that was newsworthy. We told people about it. And finally, of course, when it gets to launch, you got to tell people that you've launched. Otherwise, who's going to hear about it? Very briefly, an anatomy of a press release. You guys might use this in your project work. Press release, again, talk to journalists. They are overworked. They're underpaid. They get a dozen games thrown at them each day. You know, which ones are you going to write about? Well, you got two paragraphs, if that, to talk about your game before they get bored. Here's a standard header, you know, the date, the location, and basically what you're talking about. This is all that they're going to read. And if they like it, they may have time to read more. Otherwise, they're not. You dive off a skyscraper, relying on quick reflexes, etc., etc. Here's your hook. This should tell you everything that you need to know about your game. And then from there, we have point number three, which was a little more detail. And then finally, you end up on your, you sort of sum it up. Oh, it's coming in 2009. Check out videos. This is what you can do. Yes?
Just a reinforcing perspective on where the journalists are. You're basically doing their job for them.
Exactly.
That's what you want to think about what you're doing there. They're just going to take that paragraph and stick it in their article. Mm-hmm. And so they're lazy and overworked, so just do their job for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So you raise a great point. If a journalist can literally cut and paste out of this and change a couple of words, you're going to increase your chances of being written about. If you make them work for it, then you better be id Software for them to write about you. All right. We also wanted to make the game interesting for people to talk about. So everything from before, the high concept, the unique qualities, and the media. Oh, here's the pizza. All right. Let's see how much I have left.
Take your time.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I had a hash brown today, Rob. It was a McDonald's hash brown. It was like a puddle of oil and then a little potato that looks sad. Eat me. Yes. We wanted people to tweet about it. You want your projects, be they student games or things that you're going to do in the future in your career, to be tweetable. You want people to be able to talk about them. So I think we had a success here because we made the game interesting enough for people to talk about the nag screen at the end of the game that tells you to give us $15 for the game. So if I can pull this up.
How did you distribute the game?
What's that?
Are you talking about distribution?
Distribution was all done digitally. So we had five publishers. We had Direct-to-Drive, Gamersgate, Impulse, Wild Tangent, and Steam, and then we sold direct from our website. So, most people are probably familiar, at least with Steam. You go onto Steam, you see the games up at the top, and, what's this thing? Let me click on it. I'll play it. We have the opportunity to do some retail, but, the margins are so ugly there that, for every game that we would sell, for every unit, we would maybe get a dollar.
A little bit about the trade-off about which of those work best for you, your website versus Steam versus others?
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that Steam is the 800-pound gorilla.
Say what?
Steam is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It is the number one platform. Direct-to-Drive, Gamersgate, Wild Tangent, Impulse. How many people are familiar with Steam? How many people are familiar with Impulse? How many people are familiar with Gamersgate? Okay, see? Steam is the place to be. If you get your game, nowhere else. You want to get it on Steam. Now, that works for my studio. You'll get other indie developers who hate Steam for a variety of reasons. You know, number one, they're actually notoriously bad at talking to you. So you can talk to them five times before they'll even respond. And that's because they have so many titles coming to them. So, you know, a lot of the press efforts go towards, hey, Steam, listen to us because we got this this Edge article, this PC Game article, and PC Gamer article, and so forth and so on. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, here's the upsell. We want people to buy the game.
Hello, it's good to see you. I can't see you literally, of course, as that would be a violation of your privacy. But listen up, I want you to grab this game because it's the best one we've ever made. I mean, those little cubes out there, if you want to find out what they all do, and now you can, so I'm going to tell you a real story. Now this is our 13th game, and it didn't program itself, no sir. It all started last year when our fixer passed around a video. Not the dirty that's hit, but the kind with people just screaming down the side of a mountain with nylon squirrel suits and no health insurance. Now, when you do something for fun and making a mistake means you end up missing parts of your body, they call that an extreme sport. And this extreme sport they call base jumping. So we saw these guys screaming down the side of a mountain, laughing into the very rotting face of death personified. And we knew we needed to turn this into a game. And this game's about jumping off a building and bullying the elderly for points, which in certain areas of the U.S. can get you convicted as a sex offender.
Okay. The objective here is to make people buy the damn game. Some people liked it so much that they reposted it. So that particular video is for some random dude who said, this is the nagging screen of, reckless disregard for gravity, revealing some rather interesting information about how this fine game came to be. I think we did include it in the final game at some point, just as an unlockable. But, you know, it was interesting enough so that people wanted to share it. Because number one, if you share something interesting and other people like that, they're going to like you more. Right? I mean, if you tell something to somebody else that's valuable to them, they're going to listen to you next time. So that's number one. Another example of tweetability, of, the ability to spread something, is if you create something that's important enough to people that their performance in that is, compelling for them to share. So, for example, I'm a good player. Give me a pat on the back for being a good player at this game. You see so many videos of people doing amazing things within games. We had a guy post 81 videos of five-star runs, so as good as you can get in each level, so that people could say, wow, you're really good at this game. I like you. We had somebody play one of the tutorial levels, and because of a bug, you could only get 4 out of the 5 stars in the level. Well, somebody found out how to get 5 out of 5 stars on that level and posted that. And people said, my God, you're amazing. Marry me.
I've seen games that link into your Twitter or your Facebook and automatically post little updates that say, actually I have a couple that say, you know, you just got finished with this score, it's awesome, without like asking me. I then go and see that it did that. Any thoughts about linking into those things?
Well, let me ask you that. How many games, how many of you guys play games where your Twitter account is linked into the game? Just one? Just one? Oh. I've seen this. Okay, so, I mean, what do you think? As a player?
The original, hey, I'm playing this game, check it out, I was fine with.
Mm-hmm.
The nags afterwards just told everybody what a total dork I was for playing the game a lot.
And told them when you were playing.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, he's playing this at 3:15 in the morning?
Yeah.
Does he have generated Twitters, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Seems to me that the automatically generated any of that's spam. I mean, a human being at this time types in their fingers.
Well, it asked me the first time, do you want to tell people you're playing this game? I said, yeah, okay, cool. But after that, I was unhappy.
Right. So I would actually say that that's very much the case. I mean, I see people on, you know, Mafia Wars or whatever on Facebook, and it just annoys the piss out of me when, you know, I get spam, spam, spam. That's okay. I'll join your family. You just haven't invited me. You know, it's not the fact that it's an automatically generated thing. It's that the content doesn't exist. It's just static. What do you get out of hearing that Dean got 115,000 points in level 16 of awe, right? Maybe something if it's, you know, if you're in a community where that's meaningful. Like on Steam, you'll get the achievements, you'll get the leaderboards, which are, you know, they're automatically done. But Twitter, which is arguably devoid of much content to begin with, is less filled with content because of those automated messages. Can we come up with something that's interesting and automated? I don't know. That's a good question. Certainly we haven't done that. How are the chairs here? Back when I went to school, we didn't have chairs. We had to stand. Back me up. Where's Mark knows? Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I remember. You had to stand uphill both ways.
Yes, in the snow. We did it.
One foot.
We did it.
She's a physics major.
That's right. Not just a major, but a graduate. They let me through. The question here, the point here, I mean, you're aware of the feeling of the chair under your butt. You weren't aware of that until I just mentioned it, or maybe you were. Please keep that to yourselves. Ask ourselves, or we asked ourselves, what aren't we aware of during the game development process? What are all the things that we take for granted while we are creating the game? And that comes to point number three, is character. And I will try to keep this short. Portal. You guys have played Portal. Most of you guys. Has anybody not played Portal? Okay. I'm going to describe it to you guys. You have a gun. You can shoot a portal here. You can shoot a portal here. If I walk out of this portal, I appear in this portal. If I shoot a portal under that chair and I shoot a portal over there, the chair is going to fall through this portal and out through that elegant mechanic, gorgeous mechanic right there. Could they have made a game just out of that mechanic? Yes. But Valve and the Portal team added detail to that. They added character to it. The talking turrets. So turrets try to kill you, but they actually talk to you in sort of a strange childlike voice. When you destroy a turret, it actually empathizes with you. It says, I don't blame you for killing me. That's really screwed up. GLaDOS, the AI narrator who starts out as as a friend, as somebody helping you, turns into this raving, maniacal voice at the end of the game trying to kill you and taunt you such that you either give up hope or you jump into the fire and kill yourself or whatever. Baked goods. Everybody's heard the cake is a lie. It's not even a meme anymore. It's a post-meme. You can't talk about that and not roll your eyes. People talk about games with character. If Portal were just this, if it were just the mechanic of shooting and shooting, it would be worth playing. It would even be worth talking about. But for months after the game was released, people were talking about the turrets. They were talking about GLaDOS. They were talking about the cake recipe that you get at the end of the game.
Cosplay.
Cosplay.
Of GLaDOS.
Really?
Yes. Sort of hovering over someone who's cosplaying as Shell. Man, I hope you find this. Otherwise, I'm going to be a real big jerk.
This is Safe Search is on? Wow, that's screwed up.
Upper right-hand corner, for example.
Is that GLaDOS?
Yeah.
Oh, that's GLaDOS 10. That's close. All right, so, you know, when you have people creating fan art and costumes about your game, you're doing something right. And it's not about the portal mechanic that they were talking about. It was about... It was about the character of the game. How do we do that? How do you do that? Well, what we did in awe was pretty straightforward. Oh, wait.
You're losing the material.
That's okay. I'm going
to
tell...
They're going to class, so don't worry about it.
Screw that. I'm going to tell you guys how to make a great game. The formula is really simple. If it's... that's all right. Our formula was simple. If it was a fun and frivolous thing, that we added, then we add it. If there was some text that we could add to the game, if there was a voiceover we could do, if there are individual images that we could create, something that, you know, those were all things that we would pop into the game without even thinking about it. Can we do something with the name? Well, what are some of the names that we came up with for Awe?
Don't forget your parachute.
Remember your parachute, falling for the rest of your life, wind, rain, you know, sun, pain, on silken wings, low altitude was the working title. And then among those, I put as a joke, ah. It was only 9 letters long at the time. But our business development guy during it, yeah, he walked in on my meeting with Dan, and he said, that's the name of the game. And he would not let me put the press release out until we changed the name of the damn game to that. It was a split-second decision, and then for 2 hours we talked about how we were going to spell it. That's a nice, easy, simple thing. Frivolous, fun, that you can do to your game. You can give it an interesting name. We did, and that was remarkable, and that helped people talk about it. So go for the low-hanging fruit. So, you know, that's why I say text, VO, individual images. Are there things that you can do to your game that are just so simple that it's easier to do them not than not to? So, for example, if you've played the game...
It's awesome. Just the opening.
You like the opening?
I mean, the menu screen music is just...
Yeah. That's the reaction we're going for. And this is the only thing that I found... I didn't mean to do an anaglyph video, but I tried it. If you put on 3D glasses, you can actually see this in 3D. It's really cool. But here's the opening. You know, it's pretty straightforward. You get right here. And I don't know why you don't get the voiceover in this one, but you get a very serious voiceover. It tells you about the history of the game and so forth and so on. And then... you get this. We could have just continued the music from the title into the menu. This is just straightforward, dead simple to change the music to something that was interesting.
As just an addendum, the music did continue over that screen at first, and then Ichiro is doing incremental improvements, adjustments. I come in after, you know, I sit down at his computer just to see what he's done. And it starts playing elevator music at me, and I cracked up.
Yeah, and people talk about it. It was something worth talking about. Not a big thing. Can you do that for your game? Absolutely. Level names, usually pretty boring in a game. Our working title level names, Free Fall for one of the levels, Cell Towers for another level. Well, which is more interesting, Free Fall or asking someone in for tea is a good way to wind down for the night? Cell Towers versus... I will tell you where to shove your 2-year phone contract. And then we have Nebin, which... do you guys all know Tamlin? How many people... forget it. I keep asking how many people. Tamlin did something really great. He basically sat down and he came up with this character called Nebin, who was this doped-out announcer whose voice played during the game. And if we go to the YouTube video that he posted...
I am terribly sorry for being late on my newscast. My mother has been having one of her episodes again.
This is something that Tamlin actually did outside of our development period and posted to Twitter, and people loved it. How long does it take to do a voiceover? Well, you have to write it, and then you have to record it, and maybe you have to re-record it. Not very long at all. How long does it take to create a character? Well, I mean, you brainstorm a couple of things, and you put out a little bit of text. Most games don't do that. We had a bunch of skits within the game. Say, for example, there was a meditation. You could actually unlock a guided meditation. Or if you got to a certain point in the game and you spent 10,000 teeth, which is the unit of currency, it's, you know, human teeth, you could buy a meditation. And it is a 3-minute-long meditation of you going, sit in a chair and relax. And it guides you through an entire meditation. And there's no Kikia screamer. And it doesn't surprise you at the end. And then it just finishes. And if you're just You know, if you're really hyped up on the game and you want to relax before you go to sleep, watch the meditation. Nothing, you know, who puts the meditation in a game? You know, people who are basically just, they have nothing, you know, we have got nothing to lose. We can screw up like this. We can do something, and EA is not going to be down our throats and say, you know, you just wasted $20 million, which is the nice thing about indie game development. You can take a lot of chances. Not a lot of indie developers do. Maybe you guys, I mean, especially as students, you have opportunity to try things and to screw up. I mean, Rob is probably not going to fail you for putting something wacky in a game as long as it, you know, isn't phallic or something like that. I don't know how you teach your classes. But it's, you know, it's a meditation, and people were just aghast that we would put a 3-minute meditation into our game. How long did it take to write? Maybe a couple of hours. How long did it take to record? An hour. And you put it into the game, and people talk about it. The buy the game spiel that you heard before, same thing. We had a bit about how to debristle a pig, which I mean that was one of Dan's. And you don't actually—it doesn't actually tell you how to debristle a pig. I chickened out, and when we started talking about slicing the pig open, that was too much for me. So it was actually about taking a pig apart. And then halfway through, you start putting it together again. I thought that was more charming and less disgusting. Anything else?
Well, the anti-meditation.
Yeah, anti-meditation. So if you're...
There's at least one comment or review, I forget, where someone referred to the meditation as completely unironic.
Yes.
And I like that phrase. Yeah. But of course, we also have the anti-meditation, which is the exact reverse of that.
Right. So if you're too relaxed,
yeah,
and you got it like a game you need to go to or whatever, anti-meditation...
Randomly travel in time.
Yes.
Instructions on what to do.
Right. So, I mean, all this corollary content, which very lightly talked about what was happening on in the game world. Like, for example, the Nebin bits that we had Tamlin record, and then the advertisements we had in-game that Ryan did, they informed the player a little bit about the game world. But, you know, this isn't about story. This is about jumping off a building and trying not to become paste. People liked it. Critics liked it.